Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Time for Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Your Milwaukee Brewers are white hot. 8 consecutive victories. They finish off a sweep of the San Diego Padres on Sunday, and they are up 4 games in the National League Central. Big series coming up to kick off the week against the Chicago Cubs. Very exciting time as we get closer and closer to September 1st. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of Microbrew, and on the other line, I've got Todd Rosiak, Brewers reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was there this weekend as the Brewers beat the Padres. He was there when the Brewers beat the Twins. They sweep a 2-game series from the Minnesota Twins, a 5-0 homestand. Following my conversation with Todd, we have an interview with the one and only Devin Williams, 2-time All-Star who had yet another good week at the back of the Brewers bullpen. Kurt Hoag, our colleague, sat down with Devin on Sunday and chatted with him a little bit. I think you'll enjoy that interview at the back of this episode. Things are looking great. The schedule has this Cubs series coming up that could be a really interesting pivot moment in the season if the Brewers are able to put some more distance between the second place team in the NL Central. But Todd, this team, no complaints. I mean, this week was a great week. The offense has come alive. They are scoring 7 runs a game. This is a completely new Milwaukee Brewers team. I don't know if there's one thing you could point to. You know, I think if you dig pretty deep into the stats, you could say that maybe some bad luck has evened out a little bit, that they're not necessarily rifling the ball hard off, you know, they're not barreling it up, but they're certainly hitting it into the corners and finding spots, and that seems to have be working out on a night-by-night basis. As you see this team, did something change? Did they get better? Is it luck evening out? I mean, how would you describe what you've seen from the Brewers here on this homestand?
Wait, let me get this straight. The Brewers' season didn't end after they were swept in L.A.?
Well, they're going to have to play L.A. again, so at some point they're going to have to beat L.A. That is still a thing, but they've just beaten everybody else in the meantime. Yeah, that's a nice little response. Well,
yeah, but I mean, you know, of course I'm making fun of all the, you know, the hyperactivity and the, you know, over-response of people. You get swept in a series where things just did not go well, clearly. Offensively, they were terrible. And they're playing a very good team on their home field, flip the script, go and sweep 3 in Texas. And all of a sudden the Brewers start a big losing skid for Texas as well, who's fallen out of first place in the AL West. But that just, you know, kickstarted what we saw this week, you know, back home. Incredible homestand for the Brewers, 5-0, 2 against the Twins, and then sweeping the Padres. The poor Padres, unbelievable there as well. I just think it's a combination of everything. Everything's coming together. You mentioned the offense. It's been, you know, it's been kind of reminiscent to me of the offense that the Brewers were utilizing early in the season, not necessarily relying on the home run ball, but guys contributing up and down the lineup and doing in the little things. I think back to the series in Texas last weekend, Sal Frelick dropping down a bunt, you know, just doing the little things, hitting behind runners, sacrifice flies, stealing bases on Sunday in the series sweeping game against the Padres, drawing all those walks. It's not necessarily super exciting to watch, but it's very effective. And, you know, you throw in the fact that the Brewers have gotten obviously tremendous pitching, both from the starting rotation and the bullpen. And again, getting some great defense. And with the defense, I think back to Saturday night's game. In those latter innings, you had Christian Yelich making an incredible catch up against the wall left. You have Elvis Peguero making a tremendous play, springing off the mound and making a tough play, throwing to first base to get a speedy runner there. And then you've got Bryce Terang closing the 8th and opening the 9th with 2 outstanding plays up the middle. So really all pieces, all parts are coming together at the right time and working in unison. And as a result, you have an 8-game winning streak, which is the team's longest since 2021.
If you don't look at that Dodgers series, you then look at the last five series, the Brewers have two games in which they scored fewer than five runs. And those were both three-run outputs. That's not terrible. They won one of those games against the White Sox. I mean, that's really something. They've got a 12-run game in there, a 9-run, an 8-run, a 10-run that was on Sunday. So, you know, there's a couple extra innings games in there as well. So there's four of them, actually. But still, this is a team that's, like you talked about, all the little things. Everything is coming together. I think you're seeing pretty good output from the guys they traded for at the trade deadline, Carlos Santana and Mark Canna. Mark Canna kind of had the big game. It does seem like, legitimately, it's a different guy every night. You know, Andrew Monasterio had a couple big hits and got the Gatorade bath, and then it's Mark Canna on Sunday. It just feels like everything is clicking right now. And I think, and I absolutely knock on wood as I say this, I think part of it is that they're just really, really healthy. There's been some health updates for guys like Aaron Ashby and Garrett Mitchell who have been out for long term. And Adrian Hauser did leave Sunday's start after two innings with an elbow issue, which apparently is minor according to the Brewers, but that's obviously an area of concern when you're talking about the elbow. But everybody's back, right? Like, Sal Frelick was hurt a little bit, missed some games, the hamstring, and then he comes back late in this Padres series. You know, Rowdy Tellez is back and hits his first home run since May 22nd on Friday night. All the pitchers are here. I mentioned Hauser, but Brandon Woodruff is obviously at the top of his game. Peralta is really rolling right now. So I think this is a really good spot for them, barring injuries all of a sudden. What do you think about the guys, though, that are still out? Are there guys that, you know, Jesse Winker comes to mind. Julio Teheran is going to get going on a rehab outing. Aaron Ashby is in the mix, possibly a rehab outing. Who are the guys that you think are still going to be here? This roster expands in September, on September 1st. So that'll happen this week. Two more spots will open up. Who else is still going to be part of this team from that group of guys? Because right now there are a lot of guys who could come back, but I don't know what they need right now. It feels like the roster is very complete right now. What do you see? What changes are still on the horizon in your mind?
It's tough to say because we just don't know where so many of these guys are in terms of their rehab process. Just based off of what we learned this week, you know, Julio Teheran is basically, you know, maybe halfway or a little bit more through his rehab process. You've got Aaron Ashby, who it sounds like is kind of behind. And it was looking like he may be able to join the bullpen in September, but now that's looking like that may be up in the air. Garrett Mitchell being in Milwaukee, and it sounds like getting toward the latter end of his rehab process. If he's able to get out on a rehab assignment, there's an interesting name to potentially throw into the mix. Granted, the Brewers are pretty well covered in the outfield right now, but that's a guy that can really add some juice on the base pass, got a little bit of pop with the bat as well. So it's tough to say. It's really, really tough to guess right now. You know, there's always the potential that the Brewers could go with the very unsexy choice, you know, as far as pitching goes, and just bringing up a guy like Colin Ray, who can give them some innings out of the bullpen, provide a little bit of flexibility. And here's a name that I think everybody is completely forgotten about since he was sent down. But what about Owen Miller? You know, this is a guy that obviously plays a bunch of different positions, can hit a little bit, has some speed on the base pass. It's exactly the kind of guy that you're looking to add for that September run. So there's a number of different ways that the Brewers can go. And, you know, we'll get our answers soon enough. It's going to have to be one position player, one pitcher. We'll see where you know, ultimately they do decide to go. But you'll notice that I did not mention Jesse Winker among that group. I fully expect once that his minor league rehab is done, the Brewers are probably going to ultimately cut ties with him, send him on his way. I just don't see a fit for him right now on the roster. Again, a guy that has struggled badly at the plate, doesn't add anything in the field, doesn't add anything on the base pass. It's hard to justify bringing him back for what's going to be the most important month of the season for the Brewers.
Couple guys I want to ask you about, and I don't mean to dwell on the parts of the roster that haven't done as well, because obviously everything is going really well. But Andrew Chafin, Brian Anderson, one pitcher, one position player, and I'd be curious what you think the future is for those guys. Andrew Chafin had another really rough outing on Friday. We're talking about very small sample, but he has not done much. He has not done well since the Brewers traded for him from the Diamondbacks at the deadline. They do have a left-handed option if they wanted to go Robert Gosser. I don't think they will, because he doesn't need to be on the 40 man yet. He's pitching very well at AAA, but I don't know if that's the guy they would go to. They might have other options. Colin Ray is one, like you mentioned. And then Brian Anderson hasn't played since August 22nd. There have been a couple, you know, pretty lopsided games here where it seemed like a defensive replacement might have been a good call, and Brian Anderson wasn't put in. I know they have a lot of trust in Andre Monasterio at this point. But those are two guys. I'm not sure if there are guys that are going to be replaced on the roster, those are the areas you might look to. But I don't know if they're going to cut ties with Chafin. They just traded for him. I mean, obviously they like him, and they wouldn't have traded for him otherwise. Brian Anderson has been here all year. He's been a little star-crossed with injuries, but obviously a guy who can play good defense, even though his offense has scuffled a little bit since the first month of the season. What do you see for those guys? Do you think there might be some moves there?
It's tough to say. The Brewers, for everything that the Brewers do right, and all the pixie dust they've been able to sprinkle on guys over the years, it seems like the one thing that they just have not been able to figure out at the trade deadline is the reliever piece. You look back at, really, since 2018, I would say Joaquin Soria was okay. He wasn't a needle mover or anything like that. Drew Pomeranz, brilliant stroke of genius bringing him on board. Since then, it's been nothing but miss after miss after miss, and it's looking like Chafin is, you know, again in that mix. To me, he looks very much like Daniel Norris did a couple years ago, a guy that was expected to come in and, you know, be a valuable veteran lefty out of the bullpen, and he's essentially made himself unpitchable very quickly. That's not to say that he can't turn it around, but Chafin's numbers certainly were not trending in the right direction when the Brewers did pick him up. So, you know, they have some time to figure it out with him. You know, he's got a long track record, and obviously they feel confident that they can turn it around. The key I keep hearing when we ask about Chafin is the Brewers feel like that he really needs to get his slider back to be able to become a more effective pitcher and get back to where he was. So, you know, I'm sure the confidence is rattled a little bit. He went so far as to shave off his mustache in Texas. That hasn't appeared to do much good. He did warn that if things didn't get better, he would shave his entire head. I don't know if we're at that stage yet. Maybe that's something to watch for in the coming weeks. That could be quite a look. But we'll see with him. And as far as Brian Anderson, it's very, very head scratching. This is a guy that early in the season looked like a total steal as a free agent signing. Playing tremendous defense both at third base and in right field. We all remember that when he was playing right field pretty regularly, hitting for power. And with the emergence of Andrew Monasterio, which nobody saw coming, let's be honest, and that combined with the back injury that sidelined Anderson for a while, he's really become a non-entity. And you don't normally see veteran players of his caliber, of his ilk, just completely falling off the radar screen, but that's really what's happened to him. And, you know, you wonder if there's still something going on with the back that they're trying to be careful with. You know, as you noted, they're not even utilizing him in late inning situations as a defensive replacement. And there have been occasions where that's burned the Brewers. Think back to, you know, that game in Washington several weeks ago, although he was on the IL then, so take that out of the mix. But I can think back last Sunday in Texas, you know, that in the ninth inning there where, you know, he threw that ball away and extended the inning. So it's interesting, and we really don't have many answers there in regard to Anderson. So that's another guy where, you know, you feel like coming down the stretch with his experience, the different ways that he can help the team, maybe that's another guy that could emerge and fill a role, fill a spot somehow. But definitely two veteran guys that for whatever reason have not been able to put it all together when the Brewers certainly could use more help at those spots.
You know, you mentioned the pixie dust and the reliever situation, where you're right, they've had so much trouble trading for relief pitching at the deadline. And oddly enough, they seem to have kind of cultivated new relievers out of, I wouldn't say out of thin air, because we knew Trevor McGill could throw hard and was part of, you know, he's part of their system. He's been up and down to the big league team. And we knew Abner Uribe was coming up at some point. And those two guys are lethal. I mean, they throwing, you got Uribe throwing 103 miles an hour this week. You've got McGill just dealing since he came back up in August, mid-August. He's thrown, I mean, it's only 7 1/3 innings. I know we're talking about a small sample here, but he's allowed 5 hits. 3 of those were today in a 2-inning outing. He struck out 13 batters, so almost double, almost 2 batters an inning, which is really impressive. And no walks. I mean, that's elite stuff. And again, teeny tiny sample, but he looks like a dude out there. And Uribe, granted, Sunday, holy smokes, horrendous, nightmarish outing. You're going to get one of those every once in a while when you're talking about a young kid who has command problems, a history of them. That's always going to bite you, but he is pretty special too. And he has been on way more than he's been off. So honestly, I feel like their bullpen is just about set right now. If not Chafin, I don't know who you would get. You know, if you make any moves, I mean, obviously they're just going to straight up add a guy in September, so that'll be part of it, but like their bullpen looks really, really good right now. Did you see Trevor McGill coming? I mean, that's maybe I'm just overrating a small sample here, but he looks awesome, Todd.
Yeah, you're obviously guys that throw that hard are going to get an extra long leash, and they're going to get more chances than the average reliever. But there's no question he's been able to put it together here. This is his fourth stint with the Brewers, and I actually asked Craig Counsell about him before Saturday's game and really what the difference has been between all those other stints and now. And he said that the way he sees it, it's just confidence. You know, he's throwing strikes. He's striking guys out. You can tell he's a confident guy out there. You know, the way he screams and yells and everything, I'm sure the opposition doesn't appreciate that, but just a, you know, super competitor. And when you can throw 100 and 101, 102 miles an hour like he can, that's a scary at bat for any guy. But then the key has always been dialing in that command. Same thing with Abner Uribe. That didn't work out so well for him on Sunday, but it did for McGill. And you look at those two spots in the bullpen now, you figure those are kind of cinched down for the time being. And, you know, you throw in Bryce Wilson, who had a tremendous 4-inning outing in place of Adrian Hauser after he left early with the injury on Sunday. It's really an impressive bullpen. And you keep going back to spring training and coming into the season and thinking, you know, looking at this team, and you figured, wow, you know, the bullpen is really a question mark. You just don't know how that's going to shake out. It's probably going to be the weak point of the team. And look at what it is now. It's really incredible with the emergence of Peguero, the emergence of Pyops, you know, the continued development of Devin Williams, just getting, it seems like he's getting better and better, which is hard to believe. And, you know, Mr. Anonymous, Hobie Milner, the job he did today, getting out of that jam created by Abner Uribe. So there's just been, everybody has kind of been carrying their own weight, doing good things when they've been called upon. And again, I keep going back to, you know, this stretch run in September, but you obviously want all those guys clicking on all cylinders once these games really start counting.
Yeah, I feel like we don't say Devin Williams the name enough. He's just been so, so special. And again, Kurt Hoge caught up with him, and there's an interview with him, a nice long interview with Devin Williams at the end of this podcast. So that is something I think people will enjoy. But had a stat after his performance Saturday that Kurt put out there. 29 times Devin Williams came into the game with a one-run lead, or it was tied in the 9th or 10th, or he was being asked to get a 4-plus out save. And 29 occasions, 28 of those ending scoreless. And the only blip there was in Washington, where there were errors by both Monasterio, Carlos Santana, and 2 unearned runs scored. Otherwise, it was all soft contact in that one, too. He's just been just unbelievable, otherworldly, and everybody has filled in around him. But by the way, you mentioned McGill, like his being, you know, very expressive on the mound might bother people, but he's 6'8", 250. So I'd like to see if anyone actually stands up to him and challenges him on that.
Yeah.
I personally will not. I will take a pass. One guy, another name that I feel like I don't say enough is William Contreras. You know, he had another great, great day on Sunday. That is becoming pretty typical. He's obviously the catcher. He's come a long way defensively, becoming one of the best framing catchers in the game of baseball. He's got a 7-game hitting streak right now. It seems like he's always doing something. And he hit a titanic 450-foot home run on Sunday. I would have said at the middle of the year, if you'd asked who the Brewers MVP was, it would have been hard to say anyone other than Christian Yelich or Corbin Burns. You know, Burns had a really good month there where he had sort of turned the corner a little bit. I know it hasn't been quite a Corbin Burns level performance. Devin Williams, like I just said, you'd have to bring him up as well. But at this stage in the season, I don't know if it's even you can't even dispute what William Contreras has done. This trade that we've talked about in the offseason with Oakland for Esteury Ruiz, getting Pyamps, and William Contreras continues to look like highway robbery. But I knew Contreras would be good. I definitely believed he would take a step forward offensively. I don't even know if we've necessarily seen that from what he did in Atlanta last year, but he's still so, so valuable. And I don't know if, like I said, I don't feel like we talk about him enough, but I mean, if somebody asks who the team MVP is, Todd, are you saying William Contreras? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, he's definitely at the top of the list for me in the conversation. And I'll bring up the terminology again, pixie dust. That's another thing the Brewers have done so well, is sprinkling that dust on guys coming over from other organizations who didn't necessarily have great reputations defensively. And, you know, Charlie Green, Walker McKinven, Nestor Corridor, those three guys work magic. And they did the same thing with William Contreras. And he's, you know, obviously added some pop to the lineup, which everybody expected. But defensively, he's become a terrific framer. He's been really good defensively, just as far as, you know, receiving the ball and also calling games. So, you know, you add that in with the offense, there's really no quibble that you can have with the impact that William Contreras has made on this team this year. And the Brewers are very fortunate as well, having Victor Caratini back there as the backup. You know, he's been the main guy for Corbin Burns every time Corbin has started. But you throw in a good year at the plate for Victor as well. And then also the fact that he's well-regarded as far as defense, pitch framing, and calling games. Brewers have a really good 1-2 punch back there behind the plate, and they have no qualms about starting Caratini behind the plate, even when Burns is not pitching, which means that they can start William Contreras at DH, and Contreras obviously can do that as well. So, you know, there's other guys that you could make a case for. Christian Yelich has cooled down a bit, but he still had a tremendous year. You know, you mentioned Corbin Burns, Devin Williams, both those guys have been tremendous as well, but for all the things that Contreras has brought to the table, he certainly deserves to be right at the top of the discussion.
Mentioned earlier, Rowdy Tellez back this week, primarily in a DH role. He hits the big home run on Friday night that gave the Brewers a really comfortable cushion against the Padres. He's had a couple nice hits. I think the question I had has been answered as to what the team would do with him, if they would give him some starts at first base, or if they really were committed to Carlos Santana being the first baseman. I think we saw it. It's Santana, and in fact, there was an injury scare for Santana on Sunday where he slid back into third base and looked like he actually had suffered a pretty bad banged up ankle. So I'd be interested to know if he maybe takes a couple days off from playing after that, but he stayed in the game. He played the rest of the game. So I don't know. It looks to me like Rowdy's just kind of a part-time player at this point, a big left-handed bat off the bench. I feel like there was a spot, I can't remember exactly, early in the week. I think maybe that was Friday night where Joey Weimer hit for himself, and I thought Tellez would be the obvious choice. It wasn't Friday. I don't remember when that was, but I thought Tellez would be the obvious pinch hit choice, and we didn't see it. What do you think for Rowdy going forward now that we've kind of seen a few games with him? I think they want to give him a long enough leash to see, you know, after coming off this injury, if he's capable of contributing at a high level. This hasn't been a great year for him even when he's healthy. But what do you expect from him going forward?
I think it's a good role, honestly. I'm sure he would much prefer to be playing every day at first base, but Carlos Santana is the starter now, the primary guy. Craig Counsell has said that. And, you know, the average aside, he really has brought a lot to the team offensively, defensively, and in the clubhouse. So you can't argue that. But to me, Rowdy Tellez is in a perfect position where, you know, he's not, I think it's pretty clear that he was pressing. He also wasn't feeling very good physically when he went on the IL initially with that forearm soreness. And then obviously he hurt the finger later, but this is a really good way to kind of ease him back, help build up his confidence. You know, he had two really big hits in that Padres series. And, you know, that certainly is going to help his confidence. He's a guy that, you know, you can have him make the occasional start at first base. You can put him in a DH when the matchup is favorable. And he's also a very scary at bat off the bench late in the game when there's a right-handed pitcher on the mound. So there's definitely places to utilize him. he's got a good attitude about things. You know, he's a team first guy. And, you know, I think he's obviously excited, like everybody is in that clubhouse, that there are, you know, really big things here on the horizon for this team if they continue to play this way. So I would expect to see Rowdy continue in this role. And indeed, if Carlos Santana needs a day or two here in Chicago, you know, you could roll Rowdy out there, although I don't think that necessarily they would love that matchup with Justin Steele coming up lefty-lefty. But that beyond that, I think just the fact that, you know, Rowdy Tellez has already contributed in a big way since coming back from the aisle with that finger thing, it's a good sign moving forward.
Mark Adonazio was at the ballpark on Saturday. I know you got to talk to him. They talked about some of the stadium stuff, and we've touched on that here. Won't go too deep into that, but saying I would think what you'd maybe expect from him, but also reassuring, I suppose, for Brewers fans with him saying they have no intention to leave. This is where they want to stay. And he's seemingly publicly seems pretty comfortable with where things are in the Wisconsin State Legislature in terms of what they're going to do to fund the stadium district and therefore fund upgrades to the ballpark over the next few years. So that stay tuned on that story, of course, that won't be going anywhere. But he also talked a little bit about Craig Counsell. And again, nothing new. But I keep revisiting this because every time I talk to somebody about Craig Counsell, when they ask, what's, you know, is he going to be here next year? Everyone's kind of surprised when I say, I don't think so. I don't think he's coming back. And again, it's not because the team doesn't want him. It's because Craig Counsell just kind of, you know, he's in a situation where he holds all the cards. It seems like this might be the right time for him to step aside, spend some time, you know, watching his sons play college baseball. He's had a great run. He's the longest tenured manager in the National League. He wouldn't have to leave the organization. He could easily move into a front office role if he wanted. It just feels like that's where we're headed. I realize it's very open-ended. We don't actually know what Craig Counsell is going to do. And it sounds like, you know, that decision isn't even going to be made until after the season. But has anything changed for you? I mean, I feel like there will be a new manager for the Milwaukee Brewers next year, and it won't be because people don't want Craig Counsell back, but maybe you know, I don't know, maybe that's too strong. How do you feel about it?
Hey, I vacillate. I go back and forth, and if you would have asked me a month ago, I would have said, yeah, I definitely think that the two sides will be parting ways. If you ask me today, I am leaning the other direction. I just feel that with the way the Brewers have played of late, and again, we still have a little bit of a ways to go before the end of the season, but just, you know, let's just say for argument's sake that the Brewers do wind up winning the Central, get in the playoffs, they play okay there. I don't, you know, is this a World Series team? Probably not. I think the offensive shortcomings are going to come through in the postseason, but, you know, to get back there and to be competitive, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility at all. You factor that in, you know, there's a lot of talent in the pipeline that has yet to reach the major leagues. You've got the promising guys already up. Garrett Mitchell will be back from injury, Sal Frelick, Joey Weimer, Bryce Terang, Abner Uribe. And this doesn't even count. That's discounting what's going to happen in the offseason. Who knows? You know, will the Brewers trade one or more of Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff, Willie Adames? I would assume that at least one of those guys would be traded. What do you get back in those deals? You know, there's a lot of things, a lot of balls up in the air, but the Brewers are still in a position where they're going to be very competitive moving forward. And with a lot of pieces that I think a lot of different teams would be interested in. So I just feel like that's going to be hard to walk away from for Craig Counsell. And I also think that, you know, we've heard it from him many times, and I really truly believe it. I don't think he would say this just to say it, that he feels like a true stewardship toward baseball in this city, in this state. And, you know, who better to be running the show than a guy who's born and bred here, played for the organization, wore all the different hats in the front office, and really has a lot of pride in filling that role. And, you know, let's be honest, the guy that is really one of the best managers in the major league. So ask me again in a month. Maybe my decision will be different then. But I just really feel with all those things that I just listed that it makes too much sense for him, you know, not to come back. And maybe it'll be a, you know, maybe they decide, well, we'll give it one more year. You know, well, give me a 1 year deal and I'll see how I feel after that, or a 2 year deal. Who knows? Maybe it'll be a shorter deal, but I do think he will be back.
All right, last one before we get to three up, three down. Craig Counsell is one of the people who can speak about the 2008 team pretty intelligently, because he, in fact, was on that team, played a big role in that team getting to the postseason for the first time in 26 years. And the Brewers brought back a couple luminaries from that unit to celebrate kind of the 15-year anniversary of that. Of course, that being CeCe Sabathia and Ben Sheets. Sabathia was there on Friday throughout the first pitch, made the rounds, was in the radio booth, and just generally hanging out, which was kind of fun. Ben Sheets came back to join the Walk of Fame. Again, we've talked about this. He was on this podcast, interviewed on this podcast, and a player that I have a lot of affinity for. I've made that fairly clear, but great character, you know, Louisiana through and through. And he came back and spoke on Saturday, and again, also made some of the media rounds. And I thought that was pretty cool to see him back as well. 2018 was a very special moment for Brewers fans. I mean, a really breakthrough moment for long-suffering fans. What any takeaways? I mean, we heard, I would say, some of the same stories kind of over and over here over the last couple of weeks, which is fine. I'm happy to relive them myself. But anything jump out at you when you were there on Saturday and got to see Ben Sheets and CeCe and a lot of other guys come back and speak about that team a little bit?
It was just really cool to see. And you know, I watched Sheets pretty closely during that thing, and you could really tell how much it meant to him. There were several times where he broke down, began crying. The first time was when they played the kind of the highlight reel for him on the video board, and at the end, you know, with his wife and his two sons, you know, telling him what a great dad, a great husband he is, and everything. Yeah, you know, it really hit him, and then he started talking about, you know, as he made his speech, you know, just what it's meant to be affiliated with the Brewers, and he's really, you know, had an affinity for this city and everything. It was cool to see, you know, because you don't often see guys, competitors like that, really, you know, wear their emotions on their sleeve like that. But he did, and it was a really cool ceremony. You know, Mark Adonazio, Debbie Adonazio spoke. Doug Melvin, as always, had some great one-liners. He's just hilarious and fun to always listen to. You know, Craig Counsell had some great comments in that video, and just to see those guys come back for him, you know, CeCe stick around, Craig Counsell makes it out there, you know, Tony Gwynn Jr. in town with the Padres, he made sure he was down there. You know, Carlos Villanueva, Ricky Weeks, both in the player development side, they were there. And then Wes Obermueller, of all people,
love
showing
that
up, you know, like, that was just so random, but that's so funny because, you know, Sheets, of course, is so proud of his 0.76 batting average. And, you know, Obermueller was actually a pretty good hitter.
He's a great hitter, yeah.
You know, going back and forth like that about the hitting. So just a really cool thing. And, you know, good on the Brewers to honor and acknowledge guys who really meant a lot to the franchise. And, you know, I think we've talked about it in the past. There really needs to be a better way, for me, of honoring guys who deserve it, but just for whatever reason have not been voted for by people who hold these ballots. How is Mike Caldwell not honored for what he did for the organization? Jim Slayton, guys like that, you know, like anybody who's followed the Brewers, you know, over the years, and you just look at the all-time lists. Those guys are still up there. If they're not at the top, they're right near the top. You know, the Pete Vukoviches, guys like that. There's really a lot more names I feel like need to have their moment in the sun for what they did for the organization. But for right now, for a guy that was just so, so good on some really bad teams, you know, hat tip to Ben Sheets. Good for him.
Yeah, Jeff Cirillo is another one that comes to mind, but I will stump for Mike Caldwell all day long. When Tom was on this podcast, Tom Hodricourt, we talked a lot about Mike Caldwell. I've interviewed Mike Caldwell for this podcast. Oh my gosh, that guy deserves to be in the Walk of Fame. I understand you want to have some, you know, you want to have standards. I would actually say Pete Vukovich, who was the Cy Young Award winner, I wouldn't necessarily vote for him over others. But Mike Caldwell was awesome. And you know, Ben Sheets, great career. And I'm super glad he's here. I certainly would have stumped for him as well. I loved watching him pitch. You know, a guy who was really only healthy for 7 years, you know, seven big leagues, eight seasons with the Brewers. You know, Mike Caldwell was good for maybe not quite 8 full seasons, but like for guys who had that sort of shorter amount of time where they burned really bright, maybe didn't have that longevity, yeah, you got to honor those guys, especially for a franchise that hasn't had a ton, you know, a ton of big names over the course of their history. This is it was really cool, like you said, to see Ben Sheets. All right, let's move into some of the more granular details from the week. That is our weekly segment here, Three Up, Three Down. Todd, I'm going to start with Bryce Terang because we haven't said his name yet. He had a great week. He had a walk-off infield single. You know, we know he can fly, and he certainly did that against Minnesota on Wednesday to give the Brewers a walk-off victory. Brewers rookies, by the way, have almost all the walk-off hits this year. There's 7 walk-offs. Yelich has 1. Joey Weimer has 2. Joey Weimer, a rookie. Andrew Monasterio has 1. That was an error, but it still counts. Blake Perkins has 1. It's all rookies. It's all up and down. The rookies are leading the way when it comes to walk-offs. But he made a couple really nice defensive plays too. A big one to kick off the 9th inning for one of Williams' appearances. He had a barehanded catch on a ball at second base that Willie Adames threw to him early in the week. So he defensively kind of beyond reproach at this point. I don't think he's going to actually be in the Gold Glove conversation. I think the fact that he missed some time when he was sent down to AAA this year, I think the fact that offensively he hasn't quite yet found himself, he's been a lot better, but still not a juggernaut offensively this season. And also the fact that I do think there are other second basemen that probably rate ahead of him. Tyrell Estrada from San Francisco is, I think, kind of at the top of that list, but I don't know if you think he's a Gold Glove candidate this season. Obviously, he's going to be at some point in his career. We're seeing just some great defensive stuff out of him, and that's been par for the course all season long.
Yeah, I covered Saturday's game against the Padres, so I only saw the Padres once, but I just thought it was interesting now that the season series is over between those two teams, the Brewers and the Padres. Josh Hader. Brewers won 6 of 7 matchups between the Padres and Brewers. And Josh Hader pitched twice against the Brewers, and inning on April 13th and inning on April 16th, both games that the Padres wound up losing.
It's so wild.
You know, yeah. I mean, obviously Hader's had a tremendous year for the Padres. I think everybody was expecting to see him come in and save at least one in this series in Milwaukee, and absolutely should have gotten a big round of applause from Brewers fans when he took the mound for all that he did while he was here, but never got the opportunity. So, I am just utterly amazed at the way the season has turned out for the Padres. If there ever has been an argument for having the biggest payroll or, you know, all the best talent, the name talent, not necessarily equating to, winning baseball. This is the perfect example. All that talent and not even a winning record, way out of the wild card picture at this point. And, you know, if that team, it looks like it's pretty much too late now, but if they can't put together some sort of miracle run in September, yeesh, they are not looking good heading into the offseason.
Yeah, a couple thoughts on Hader. It was interesting seeing Mookie Betts come back to Boston this weekend with the Dodgers. And if you think that Brewers fans are obsessed with the Josh Hader trade from last year, you should talk to Boston fans who are very, very deeply obsessed with the Mookie Betts trade. And honestly, kind of rightfully so. They didn't get a ton of value out of that deal. And, you know, Alex Verdugo is still on Boston, but for the most part, it's guys that are not going to be difference makers for them. And they gave away an MVP, a generational talent, essentially. That deal had a lot of problems, but he got a huge standing ovation in Boston, you know, and I don't know what the reaction would have been to Hader. I've seen players get traded away and they get booed when they come back through. Obviously their departure is through no fault of their own, but I was really curious to know how I imagined people would give him a nice round of applause. We didn't get to see it because he didn't pitch in Milwaukee, which blows my mind. And it also speaks to how he's used. And this was something we talked about when he was in Milwaukee, you know, whether it's his choice or the team's choice, I know there were whispers about just how arbitration value saves, and that was playing into some of the decision-making there, but Josh Hader only gets used in the 9th inning, and he only gets used almost exclusively in save situations. They don't turn to him for other things. So even if there's a tight game in the 8th, you're not going to see him pitch necessarily. And I do think, you know, as I compared the two of them, Devin Williams and Josh Hader, and the reliever of the year race in a piece at jsonline.com going into this series, you got to consider Alexis Diaz for the Reds in that mix as well. But That is an interesting marker between the two of them. Devin Williams will get used in a lot of situations, including for four out saves a couple times, including in tie games. You don't see that as much with Josh Hader. And that's, I think, kind of the one distinctive mark, I would say, that favors Devin Williams. I mean, if I were choosing between the two of them, even though Josh Hader's got an ERA under one, I would choose Devin Williams. He's getting used in every leverage situation the Brewers can put him in. And that's, I think, increasing his value quite a bit. So I definitely wanted to see Hader. And maybe it would have meant that the Brewers were losing, and that wasn't necessarily the case. But it would have been cool, I think, to see him pitch at American Family Field. Okay, sorry. It's taking me a while to get to my number two here in three up, three down. So we'll go back to a really amazing catch by Christian Yelich on Saturday against the wall. A line drive that I actually thought off the bat, I think it was off of Garrett Cooper's bat, I thought it was going to be a game-tying three-run homer. It would not have left the yard, so it wouldn't have been that, but definitely looked like it was ticketed for extra bases. Christian Yelich leaps, makes a catch. I guess it wasn't like Swan Lake graceful necessarily, but it was still a really big spot. And I come back to something I've said a lot. Christian Yelich has been pretty solid defensively this year. He has gotten better as a left fielder. His arm is grading out better. His defense is better. You know, he's not, I say he's not Gold Glove caliber, but given who plays left field in the National League, I can tell you it is probably actually Gold Glove caliber. He was a finalist last year, and as crazy as that sounded, it wasn't like there were a ton of obvious options ahead of him. I don't think he's necessarily going to win a Gold Glove or anything like that. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying he's a better defender, and he made a great play in a big spot. Christian Yelich, again, coming through for this team.
I do have to say that play was very reminiscent to me of the Matrix kick by Anthony Pettis. Remember that?
And yes,
where he bounced off the fence. Yelich was able to kick his leg out, made the catch, and kind of kicked himself off the wall, and was able to make a good throw back in as well. So that's kind of what popped into my mind when I saw that play. I absolutely do believe he's going to be a finalist. I think he's got a very good chance of winning a Gold Glove out there in left field.
That's
which
wild.
is crazy to think after what we saw in the last few years. So, yeah, you know, I did a story on that a while ago talking to him about it, and he just, you know, he made it a priority again. He decided that it was embarrassing that he was getting pulled from games late for defensive purposes, and rededicated himself to playing better defensively, work with Quentin Berry, who is a very underrated, unknown part of the Brewers coaching staff, but does a tremendous job in a number of areas. Outfield defense is one of those. And, you know, Yelich has flipped the script for sure.
All right. What's your number two?
I was going to bring up Jacob Mizorowski. You know, this is a guy that's got everybody very, very excited, and rightfully so, for what he's done in the minor leagues to this point. He's been placed on pause by the Brewers. Some arm fatigue, nothing to be worried about as far as injuries go, we've been told. But obviously the Brewers are going to play it very, very carefully with him. This is a guy that has superstar potential. You know, we talked about Abner Uribe and Trevor McGill throwing 102, 103 miles an hour. This is a starting pitcher that throws that, which is really mind-blowing, and has rocketed up the prospect list this season. So he's been shut down at this point. It's probably unlikely that he's going to see the mound again for Double-A Biloxi. There's just probably not enough time left in the season for him to rest and then ramp it back up again. So probably going to put a wrap on his year, which has still been pretty successful, and would not be surprising to see him get a little bit of time in instructional league in the fall. We'll see what happens with Arizona Fall League. I guess there's always the potential for that, but you know, that aside, innings limit was coming up. It's just been a tremendous year for him. Put himself on the radar for sure. And, you know, we saw how fast Abner Uribe moved this year. Who knows? Maybe we see Mizorowski in the majors next year at some point.
Yeah, I think absolutely out of spring training, there's going to be conversations about putting him in that spot. Maybe he's a fifth starter who kind of goes back and forth between the minors so they can keep his innings under control. He's obviously a very intriguing talent, but yeah, I don't think we're going to see him this year at any point. I think that ship has sailed. Okay. So for my number three, I'm going to go back to, the Tuesday game at the start of the week. That was, against Minnesota. I guess you could call it a moment of levity. McGill checks in the ninth inning to try to lock down a 7-3 lead. Royce Lewis singles, kind of hits a ball that deflects off Carlos Santana. He makes a hard turn at first. Bryce Turan gets to the ball. You could see it on his face, Royce Lewis's face. as in real time, he realizes, oh no, I gotta get back, and he falls down. He's a sitting duck. Terang throws him out with ease. You know, Santana plops him on the head, and that's that. Nice to get that first out of the ninth inning, even though it was a 4-run lead. You know, you never really know how these things snowball. Just consider what happened in Minnesota when Devin Williams came in and gave up 4 runs astonishingly without getting an out. You know, you never know how this stuff goes. So that was a good out, a little moment of levity. It reminded me of the Adolis Garcia when he was with the Cardinals falling down between third and home on a much, much more pivotal game and a much more pivotal play that could have turned the tide against the Cardinals. Brewers clinch the division that night, or clinch the playoff spot, I think. I'm not sure which one that was, but that was back in 2018. So, you know, levity, I guess, is probably too strong, because I'm sure the Twins weren't exactly laughing about that one, but just a moment to remark upon early in the week.
Twins base runners had a hard time staying on their feet throughout the series. In that second game of the series in Milwaukee, if you remember, in the 10th inning, Ryan Jeffers took a header. He beat out yes. that infield squibber going down the first base line and was actually able to make the base. And that was a big play at that point in the game. Obviously the Brewers turned it around and won the game, but that was pretty funny as well. My last three up, three down is going back to Christian Yelich. And I was doing a little bit of number crunching here, and for as good of a season he's had to this point, he's really kind of regressed offensively, and that's something to keep an eye on moving forward here in the final month of the season. I wasn't able to add, using Baseball Reference here, doesn't have Sunday's game updated. He did not have a hit Sunday, but for the month of August, .247 batting average, slugging only .303, 8 RBI, no homers. You know, this is a long enough sample size now. It makes you a little bit concerned. We thought that he had turned the corner, and indeed, I'm not nearly suggesting that this is the Christian Yelich of, you know, several years past, where he just struggled in every area of the game offensively. But at a time when the Brewers need him most, you know, Christian Yelich really does need to step up, and to get a big month of September out of him for an offense that really is clicking on all cylinders, that would be huge. So that's a guy for me to really keep an eye on here over the last couple weeks of the season.
As guys like Tyrone Taylor, Sal Frelick have been sort of difference makers in August, you haven't necessarily needed that Herculean output from Christian Yelich, but you're totally right. And it's not that Yelich is taking, you know, going on long 0-for streaks. He's still getting a hit pretty much every game or every other game, but it's usually a single. We're not seeing the, like you said, no power, no home runs, not seeing as many extra base hits in general. He's got a couple doubles, a few doubles in August, but it's,
yeah, just not super impactful like Agreed. It had been for quite a while.
Agreed. All right. That'll do it for three up, three down. A couple things we could have mentioned, but did not. Trent Grisham with a 16 pitch at bat against Brandon Woodruff, in the series against the Padres. Woodruff wins that battle, gets the strikeout. Actually, Woodruff with 11 strikeouts, when you consider one of them was a 16 pitch at bat. That tells you he had to be pretty efficient the rest of the way to stay in the game long enough to rack up 11 strikeouts. So that's something we mentioned. Rowdy with his first home run since May 22nd. Had to laugh. Corbin Burnes had probably his worst outing of the year, and the Brewers win that game. One start after, he was held the Dodgers to nothing over 7 innings, and the Brewers end up losing that game. Isn't that baseball, the wins and losses situation? The Brewers having their aces back in this particular case. And fans booing Manny Machado. They have not forgotten what happened back in 2018 when Machado was with the Dodgers. They were booing him mercilessly through this series. He took a bat to a water cooler after a frustrating out in the seventh inning on Sunday. So fans maybe got the one up on that one with Manny Machado. Also, Bryce Wilson, we should mention, four big innings for him in that Sunday game when Adrian Hauser left with an injury. He's been solid all year long. I mean, he's had his ups and downs a little bit, but for the most part, he has been very good and certainly played his role well. All right, let's go back in time. It's Remember When.
Red Hot Memories, High School Beat.
All right, so Todd, I had to revisit 2008. Actually, last week I kind of touched on a bad game from 2008 in the middle of the season. But I wanted to go back to that home stretch. Everybody remembers the final game of the year against the Cubs in 2008. CeCe Sabathia on the mound. I wrote at length about it. 15 things you may or may not remember from that game. That finale on September 28th, 2008. So you could go check that out if you'd like. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the finale in this case, but I wanted to look at those starts at the end of the year. Everyone talks about CeCe Sabathia pitching on 3 days, 3 days rest, short rest. And he did that for the final three regular season starts of the season and the playoff start against Philadelphia, which famously did not go well. I had forgotten some things about this. Now the Brewers actually, they lost a couple of these starts, you know, with him pitching on short rest, in which case I'm kind of surprised they maybe decided to keep going with it because the first couple outings weren't so great. They had been 12-1 in Sabathia starts before he lost September 16th. This is right in the aftermath of them firing Ned Yost. This is not a short rest start, but they lose that game 5-4. The Cubs got an insurance run because Henry Blanco, former Brewer, had a two-out single against Brian Chouse in the eighth, and the Brewers ended up having the tying run at second. They had runners at the corners after a Braun infield single, but Prince Fielder struck out, so they lose that game. And then there's a game in between the Sabathia starts that I'd completely forgotten about. It's a game where the Brewers were up 4 runs in the ninth and ended up in a tie. They ended up losing in the 12th inning on a Derek Lee walk-off single, which I don't remember this game, but it would easily be remembered forever if the Brewers had not made the playoffs. This was an utter collapse on September 17th or 18th, I think it was, 3 games into the Dale Swaim era. This cost them the series. They lost a 2-1 to the Cubs. Salomon Torres, who's rightfully celebrated for his stepping up at the closer's role, had a really quite a bad month of September, and he had 2 outs with nobody on when they gave up these 4 runs. It was a Ramiz Ramirez double where Ryan Braun makes a terrible play in the outfield, allows the ball to get to the wall, becomes a double. You had a Jim Edmonds single, Mark DeRosa, and then Giovanni Soto hits a 3-run homer to tie the game. You had J.J. Hardy thrown out at home in the top of the 12th, so the Brewers had a chance to win. They had to use the next day's scheduled starter, Seth McClung, and then next day against Cincinnati, they got bombed. Jeff Suppan started, gave up 5 runs in the first. They ended up losing like 11-1 or something. So they were down bad. I remember the Philadelphia series. I remember the Cubs 4-game sweep at Miller Park midway through the season. I don't remember this game, but I should. Sabathia comes back September 20th. That's the night J.R. Radcliffe gets married, so it's meaningful to me. But the Reds score 3 runs in the sixth against Sabathia and win that game. September 24th, another short start. He comes back, though, and has 11 strikeouts against Pittsburgh. This is where he really turns in some Herculean stuff. Again, this is his third straight start on short rest. He only allows 4 hits. It's the only game of that Pittsburgh series that doesn't end with a walk-off home run, but it's still just as meaningful. And then, of course, the finale, where The one thing I wanted to point out from that finale that I wrote about in that story, Sabathia almost homers in the sixth inning. He hits a bomb that is just to the right of the right field foul pole. I had forgotten about that completely. I can't even imagine if the Brewers had won that game and Sabathia had homered in his complete game shutout. It would have been truly something epic. But again, more of that at jsonline.com if you want to revisit that game. I had a story about Ben Sheets as well if you want to revisit kind of his career, some of that from 2008. All good stuff. So that is our look. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I can throw a little anecdote in there about that during the Ben Sheets thing or afterward, you know, in some discussions with some people who were, you know, in high places in the organization, reflecting on the CC trade and everything, we're reminiscing about, you know, we talk about guys who really put themselves, put the team ahead of themselves, CC Sabathia, you know, in He's heading toward a mega contract as a free agent, just wanted to win so badly that he's taking the ball every 3 days. His agent was not happy at all with the situation and was accusing the Brewers of pushing CC and abusing him and everything. And when CC found out about it, he got really mad and he basically told his agent to shut up let him handle it. And he's going to do what he wants to do. So, you look at how CC, I mean, he definitely did break down in the latter years. I think that has, you know, more to do obviously with the age and everything, but he put a lot of excess mileage on himself and on his arm, in that second half for the Brewers, helping deliver that postseason run in 2008. So for that reason, many others definitely earned a place in Brewers lore in a very, very short tenure with the team.
It's very difficult to explain to people who weren't living through the 90s how important it was to make the playoffs. And in 2008, they're on the cusp, and they end up getting in by a game in the most dramatic sense possible. And they don't go, if Sabathia, you know, without him, it's not even a conversation. You know, they needed every ounce that they got from him. Those two wins on short rest at the end of the season were essential. Every win mattered. And he won the vast majority of the games he pitched. You know, he's 11-2. So without that, it obviously it's not even a question. And the Brewers are still suffering, you know, and, you know, they didn't go to the playoffs again until 2011. The teams after that were not good enough. So it could have been an even longer wait. That was just such a breakthrough. 2008 was such a breakthrough. All the drama, everything.
And, yeah. One more thing I was going to say too, is when we were talking to Mark Attanasio, he was talking, kind of reminiscing about it too. And, you know, the trade, you look at the trade that brought CC here, and it was Matt LaPorta, you know, was the big, you know, the big prospect at the time, Zach Jackson. And then it was a choice of between Taylor Green and Michael Brantley. We all know who the Indians took, the then Indians. And he turned out to be a really good player, but you do that trade looking back 100 times out of 100, it wasn't so cut and dried back then. And, you know, Mark had talked about, you know, Doug reaching out to him and saying, hey, we can get Sabathia, but we have to move now, and this is what we have to give up. And it wasn't, you know, it was a tough decision for a little while, but Mark had said, you know, we had to make that trade. It had been so long that this franchise had suffered, had not been to the playoffs. We had to do that. It was a no-brainer, and, you know, obviously was a trade of a lifetime for the organization.
Absolutely. Five-time All-Star Michael Brantley, great career, no doubt, but the Brewers make that trade, like you said, 100 times out of 100. All right, that does it for Remember When. Let's close this thing down as we do every week. It is Todd's Take of the Week.
Ryan Braun sends it to left center and deep. Get up! Get out of here! Gone! For Ryan Braun, he just hit a walk-off home.
Chicago. Wrigley Field, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Who'd have thought when the schedule came out that this series would be as big as it's going to be? You know, this is a Cubs team that has really come out of nowhere, surprised many, many people, and is in contention. You know, they've really supplanted the Reds, I think, right now as the thorn in the Brewers' side. And for so many reasons, you know, the rivalry and all that stuff, you know, it's going to be, I think, a really fun series, a very interesting series. The teams do meet one final time, and wouldn't you know, the last three games of the season for both teams, end of September, October 1st at American Family Field. But this should be a good one, and it's going to be, you know, some really good pitching matchups. Monday, we've got Wade Miley against Jameson Taillon. Tuesday, Corbin Burnes against Justin Steele. And then Wednesday, Brandon Woodruff against that old thorn in the Milwaukee side, Kyle Hendricks. And, you know, his numbers aren't tremendous this year, but, you know, he always pitches really, really well against the Brewers. So this should be a very fun series, very interesting series. And, you know, one that's, I think, as long as the Brewers don't get swept, that's the key. You know, it shouldn't hurt them too bad if they lose 2 out of 3. But honestly, you know, obviously you want to win as many as you can. And, you know, being able to tick off one full game each time, you know, these teams play, that's a big deal. So should be a fun three games.
Cubs have had a pretty easy schedule lately against the Royals, Tigers, and most recently against the Pirates. And they've won all three series, but they haven't done it really, you know, they haven't dominated these games. A lot of them, they needed late runs, somewhat to extras. So long story short, they're through a pretty easy corridor of their schedule. And now they get into things that it's a little bit tougher for Chicago going forward. In fact, if you look at win percentage, the Brewers have the easier schedule going forward. It's really close. It's super negligible. But the Brewers have this 4-game lead after the Cubs came through a pretty favorable stretch. So that definitely favors the Brewers. I think you like the fact with the 4-game lead that even if the Brewers get swept, they're still going to walk out of Wrigley Field and come back home to Milwaukee to face the Phillies with the lead in the National League Central. That's a comforting feeling, I got to think. And obviously things get a lot better if they win even one of those games. So this is a nice spot for the Brewers to be in, having all the success leading into this series. I still feel like this is the warm-up act, and the last three games of the season that you mentioned could be for a lot. There could be a lot on the line there as far as the National League Central goes. And I'm eager to see how things shape up going forward. Todd, any last thoughts before I send you away?
I'm heading down to Chicago on Monday in my seventh game in Chicago this season. I am a big fan of the balanced schedule now, where we don't have to go to Chicago exorbitant amount of times like we used to. I will bid adieu to Wrigley Field, and who knows, maybe there'll be a scenario where we wind up back there in the postseason. Wouldn't that be something?
That would be wild. That would be truly something. The Brewers have a 4-3 lead in the season series. That tiebreaker could easily come into play. So every game does matter against Chicago. Again, three games there at Wrigley. They'll take one day off, and then it's weekend against Philadelphia. Another power player in the playoff chase. They're a top team in the wild card right now and playing very good baseball. So again, the Brewers have a 2-1 lead in that season series. That tiebreaker could come into play. So that's not something to shrug off either. Nice week of baseball for the Brewers, who, again, white hot, 8 wins in a row. It has been a good time. Todd, thank you for joining us. I'm going to move now to my interview, or not my interview, Kurt Hoges. Our colleague Kurt Hoges sat down with Devin Williams on Sunday to chat with the All-Star closer, two-time All-Star, about his process a little bit and where he stands, and has a couple fun questions for Williams. So enjoyed that interview, listening to that one, and I hope you enjoy it as well. Todd, thank you for joining us this week. We'll chat again soon.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. All right, here's Kurt's interview with Devin. Thank you for joining us this week. We will chat again very soon. Bye-bye.
Kurt Hoge here, joined with a special guest for this week's pod. We've got two-time All-Star, Brewers closer, and swing and miss merchant Devin Williams coming on. Devin, how are we doing this fine morning?
You know, just wonderful, man. Just getting ready for this game.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are on a 7-game win streak as the time of recording this. We'll see if it goes state by the time this comes out. But just, I mean, things seem like they're going pretty good around the squad right now. What's the vibe? What's the feeling with you guys in the clubhouse at this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, good energy. It's fun to show up every day. We like hanging out together. We like, you know, playing hard for each other and, you know, just trying to win games.
A lot of one-run games. You guys play a lot of close games. Most of the time, that comes down to you. Do you like the closer it is, or... kind of take me through your thought process as you're coming in a close game.
I mean, yeah, I like it. You know, when it's close, because it's easier to lock in.
Yeah.
I mean, the rare occasion that I pitch with, you know, more than a 3-run lead, I feel like I don't focus the same, and it's kind of a little bit of a struggle in those scenarios, but. You know, when it's one run, two runs, and you don't have, room for error, it's a lot easier to lock in then.
Do you feel like, I mean, does it seem like to you it's been a ton of close, like, more than usual one-run games and, like, tie games, and, like, you're just not pitching with much margin for error?
That's what I'm paid for, you know, and that's what I enjoy is when the game's on the line, it's a close game, and, you know, I'm able to come through for my team.
How do you lock in? What's your process?
I don't know how to really explain it to you. It's just something that
just happens.
You know, sometimes it's easier than others, but you know, it's just kind of a feeling. I don't know how to explain.
So there's not like a particular point in the game, like sixth inning, seventh inning, something where you're just like, okay, like, stop talking to me.
Well,
I gotta go.
No. But, like, I mean, I'm down there in the bullpen, you know, just kind of messing around for the first couple innings till we get to the sixth inning. And then I start my routine, you know, I start stretching and getting activated, warm up my arm, and then, you know, just I warm up and go in the game.
Who's the funniest guy in the bullpen?
Funniest guy? I don't know. Maybe Weisenberg?
Okay.
I don't know.
None of the pitchers?
No, not really funny. I mean, we all just kind of joke around together, you know?
Okay. Who's got the best fashion sense in the bullpen?
That would be me.
That would be you? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what about this one?
It depends on what you're looking for. If you want, like, someone that, you know, you need, like, a pediatrician for your kid, like, yeah. Hobie. Hobie's that guy. You know, if you're looking for, like, a, you know, more southern kind of cowboy boots, that's Chapin or, you know, Bryce Wilson.
Billy, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Billy.
Okay. What about, how about this? Best dressed media member.
I got to go with you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I don't know, though. Sophia's...
Well, Sophia, yeah. I feel like...
Does she count?
We can't count her because she's going to win.
All right.
If she's
count
counted,
Sophia,
yeah. So we
got
to throw her out.
You.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Just take that, Todd. going back to the bullpen here, I got to ask you about Abner Uribe. Just what have you seen and, like, how impressed have you been with what he's doing immediately after coming up into the big leagues?
Yeah, I mean, well, you see the stuff. And there's a mindset that comes along with that, you know, of, like, just attacking guys and trusting what you have and what you can do. And he's done that. You know, he's had, I think, one, I would say, bad outing since he's come up. But, you know, he's been really impressive so far.
Do you feel like you're now one of, like, the elder statesmen back there?
I mean, do I feel like that? No. But, like, in our bullpen, am I? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, and as a closer too, yeah.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I still feel like I debuted. It feels like, you know, yesterday.
A couple years ago.
But it's actually This is my fifth season now. So, yeah, I guess you could say that I am.
Yeah, the cutter was a big story. Was it last spring training? Feels like a long time ago, but
yeah.
I think one of the storylines of spring training. You know, as we're trying to, like, figure out. What are we going to talk about it this spring?
Yeah.
And then you've brought it back a little bit this year. Where, like...
I mean, I think I've definitely used it already this year than I have last year. So, but, I mean, it's not like something I need all the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of something if I feel like, you know, guys are on the other two, then I might mix that in.
Do you think... are you a guy that just, like, spins the ball really well? Like Corbin's that kind of guy. Like, he just taught himself a new slider, basically.
Yeah.
Did you say you spin it well?
I spin it well, like, if I'm pronating.
Okay. So could...
If I'm supinating, then no.
Okay. There you go. A little anatomy lesson with us. I asked that because my wonder is, could you teach yourself a sweeper? Like a sweeping slider, whether you want to call it a sweeper or not.
I kind of played around with it. Yeah, it was before last year.
Okay.
I was playing around with it a lot in the offseason, and I had what I thought could be a usable pitch, which is, like, what everyone was calling a sweeper now.
Yeah.
But then I just had more consistency with the cutter, so that's kind of stuck with
me. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of just like a hard slider, pretty basically, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can shape it a little differently, but
yeah, because you were looking for, like, that third pitch that, like, goes the other way, sort of, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't have to use it too often. So.
Yeah. Okay. How do you feel like your command has been this year? Going to the swing and miss merchant conversation, because there's some that are like just don't like this. I guess the gist of that argument is like don't swing and you're gonna walk. How do you feel like your command is? Do you feel like you command the ball well?
I mean, I feel like I can throw strikes when I want to. It just depends. Do I want to? You know?
So sometimes, well, I guess that makes sense. Yeah, like you're not always trying to put the changeup.
Yeah, I don't always want it in the zone.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's a mindset thing.
I think
when I want to throw strikes, I can, and I'm pretty good at you know, staying on the edges.
Yeah.
For the most part, you know, I don't want to jinx anything.
Yeah, you're good right here. Very good.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have pretty good command.
Yeah. You pitched in the World Baseball Classic. That was a while ago. But, I mean, do you feel like that got you ready for this year that you're having? Like, just being... I guess you could argue, like, if it had been a bad year, like, you could say you got ready too soon. And if you had a good year, you could say, like, it got you ready for it. But, like, do you feel like that prepared you well?
I mean, in my personal opinion, I think it was... you know, a great way to start this year. You know, playing in games that actually matter, not just going out and spring training and it doesn't matter, you know, you're just throwing your pitches just to throw them. there's a lot of focus and intent that went into the WBC, and I think I just have kind of carried that, you know, throughout the season. Versus like the last few years where that's what I've done, is just gone to spring training and you're just getting your work in. It's not really a competitive game, you know. I think you've kind of seen that at the beginning of the year. My command has kind of struggled at you know, the first couple weeks of the season.
Would you do it again?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And one thing I think we talked about too in the past was like, it's kind of crazy. You have not pitched in the playoffs yet. And like, that's where you guys are on track to do this year. And do you feel like that kind of like got you a little taste of what it might be like running in here and there's 40,000 people with the game on a line?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's, you know, some differences, but, you know, a lot of those guys on the team had, you know, we were coming off a World Series, you know, between the Astros and the Phillies. We had a lot of those guys, and, you know, everything I heard from them is that it was
similar,
if not better in some games. Like that Venezuela game was insane. You know, the crowd was super into every pitch, and, you know, it was shaking in there. So I think it was, you know, pretty comparable.
Some trivia for you. Who was your first strikeout? Do you remember?
Brian Reynolds. Okay. He's also my most faced batter in the major leagues.
Yeah, every time.
It's like a joke now. Every time we play the Pirates, I face Brian Reynolds.
And who have you struck out the most? Do you know that one? It's not Brian Reynolds.
I would have to guess, just based off of... I would have to say Castellanos?
Close, he's second. It's Jonathan India.
Okay.
So a guy that was on the Reds. You faced the Reds a lot.
Yeah.
And it's been positive.
I've had some success against him.
Yeah. I mean, is that tricky, like being like facing these guys in the division so much? Do you feel like you have to change it over because you're a reliever? Like,
no,
they
kind of
know what you have. And
there's definitely tweaks that are made. You know, I don't want to attack guys in the same way every time. You kind of have to do different things to keep them off balance, and you know, that's my goal, is to, you know, never become predictable or, you know, anything like that.
Yeah, kind of going back to the playoffs here a little bit. You've had a few like multi-inning outings this year, four outs, ace, five outs. This was in May. It was a while ago, but come playoff time, are you a guy that's open to just like throwing whenever for how long you need to, or have you thought at all about like what kind of role you would want to take on in a do-or-die setting?
You know, I haven't really put much thought into it, so I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
You just like taking the ball whenever, though. That's kind of...
You know, I will say there is something different, though, about, you know, finishing a game.
Yeah.
It's a nice feeling when it's over. You know, they don't have any more opportunities to score, and, you know, we're shaking hands, so...
Is the eighth inning different than the ninth inning in your experience?
I think that's the only difference, is that the game's over, you know.
But working it, just like how you feel when you're in like nerves or whatever.
I mean, if I, you know, give up a run in the eighth inning, it counts the same as the ninth inning. So I've always viewed that as the same.
Yeah.
You know, when we had Hader behind me, you know, I'd do my job, and then.
Yeah.
Nine times out of ten, the game was over, you know, so.
Yeah, been nice seeing him here.
Yeah.
See John.
Yeah, I got to talk to him yesterday.
And at the All-Star game, so you guys were both there. I'll put you on the spot here for the last one. Who's the best relief pitcher in baseball right now?
I don't ever include myself in these things, so I would have to say right now, unfortunately, he got hurt the other day, but... Felix Bautista is looking pretty unhittable this season.
Yeah, between the stuff and the performance.
Yeah, like. I mean, he had 100 strikeouts like a month ago, so that's always been a goal of mine, to get to 100
strikeouts.
And he did it in like June, I want to say, July, something like that. He was already there.
You got to throw in a lot of games, though, a lot of innings, I guess, to get to 100 strikeouts. Or
I mean, if you're striking out two innings, that's 50 innings. But His stuff is incredible.
He's also a swing and miss merchant, but it's not here nor there. All right, Devin, thanks for the time. I'll let you get going. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.